Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week we'll be speaking with Gudrun Bruno, who was born in Sweden and now lives in the U.S. working as a translator and interpreter.
We'll talk with her about how conditions for the blind are different in Sweden and the United States, as well as some of the tools she uses to do her work. But first, for our tip of the week. This week's tip is, if you have a special skill, figure out a way to use it. For example, Gudrun is fluent in several languages and has made a career out of translating back and forth among them.
And that's really great advice. If you're doing something that you're good at, it's easier to succeed at it and probably you enjoy it. Similarly, if there's something you enjoy, you should find a way of integrating that into something that you can do all the time and that'll maybe become your profession even.
And as we all know, unemployment is rampant among visually impaired people. And I think part of the problem is that prospective employers look at a person and say, oh, this person's visually impaired, what can they do? And really, you want to turn that question around and say, this is what I want to do. What accommodations do I need in order to make it happen? Gudrun's story is a great example of that. You know, she wanted to do the translating and interpreting, and she's found some tools that enable her to do that and work with her wonderful facility with languages.
I will ship it today. By next Monday, I'd say you should have it. I guess.
Come on, old Speedy Gonzales.
We'll spare you the chapters on cords and adapters and a custom-made desk.
That was Ain't Technology Great? A study in cyber suffering. I hope that will ring true to a lot of MIDI-MAG list members.
And as you might have guessed, that was Gudrun herself, who you'll see quite often on the MIDI-MAG list if you're a member of that list of musical people who are also blind. And it's quite a great place to network if you have those kinds of interests.
Let's start by meeting Gudrun.
I am Gudrun Bruno. I'm a translator and interpreter, mostly telephone interpreter. I live in Twisp, Washington. It's about 4.5 hours by car east of Seattle, across the Cascade Mountains. And I live here with Rob, and we have a house here that we love, and we have some land around it. I have an office on the bottom floor, which I refer to as the dungeon sometimes. And I do some music, sometimes performing with recorded accompaniment, and I call it Gudrun Bruno and the Downstairs Dungeoneers, but that's not what I'm talking about today. But this is where I am right now, and talking with Nancy and Pete.
Many of our listeners have visual impairments. Do you?
Yeah, I'm totally blind.
What was the cause of that?
Rubella, while my mother was pregnant.
Were you born in this country?
No, I was born in and raised in Sweden.
And how long were you there?
I was there until I was 31.
What was it like growing up in Sweden being blind? Do you have the same kind of services that we have in the U.S. here and resources available to you?
Actually, I would say it is better. For example, you have a contribution to cover certain expenses that you will incur as a blind person. And you have that regardless of your financial situation. When I went through college, I had help producing textbooks. A lot of them actually came on time when I needed them, not half a semester too late. And studying languages in Sweden, it meant that books were also borrowed from libraries in Germany and France so that I could get them that way. They didn't have to be reproduced. And there are many good services that people have there. Things like an escort that you can have for a couple of hours a week, maybe. And you can go shopping, you can go for a walk, you can go and do errands. And I think it's a very civilized service that helps level the playing field a little bit for people. Because we all know that for many of us, those things require a little bit more of an effort, depending on how skilled we are. But even so, with an escort, you can zip through a lot of errands in a couple in an hour or two, which will take you that whole time to maybe get one of those errands done, you know, when you're out on your own. So I think also things like reading mail and so forth, the county will often provide you with a service. And these people are paid, so they're not volunteers. And they're paid by the county so that it's not a matter of using the goodwill of volunteers.
You know, we've asked many of our guests from overseas about conditions for the blind in their home countries, and we always respond by saying how lucky we think we are in the U.S., but apparently things are even better in Sweden.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is being a translator and interpreter who happens to be blind. So we really want to talk to you about your translation and interpretation business. Your English is fabulous. Presumably, having been born in Sweden, your Swedish is at least as good. What languages do you typically translate from and to?
I'm certified to translate English, Swedish, both directions, and French into English and French into Swedish. I do not translate into French. And I do occasionally do some German to English or German to Swedish translation, but less so. I have more dictionaries available to me between English and Swedish and French. So that kind of determines a little bit. I don't, German, if I get a tricky subject where I may not have so many resources, then it's a harder, you know, part of translation most of the time is vocabulary research and scouring the net and scouring your dictionaries and making sure you have the right word, you know, when you translate.
That must be especially challenging when you're given a topic that you previously were unfamiliar with. How do you go about obtaining sufficient knowledge to make sure that you've got the right words?
Well, the first thing you have to do is understand the source. That is, do you understand in the source language how this fan belt is supposed to run, what it's supposed to do? What are the parts that it is attached to? How does it go through these things? So if you don't understand that, you write a letter to some colleague and say, I have a job where I'm supposed to translate. This is a fan belt that is part of a ventilation system. And here is the context. And you write the paragraph where this is. So what does this word blah, blah, blah mean really here? Or how does it really connect? I don't quite understand. I might ask Rob to look at this particular illustration. Sometimes you get illustrations. And so you ask him to look at that. And he said, oh, it comes from the top of a pointed thing. And it's called a so-and-so. And it goes through the this and that. Turns around the whatchamacallit. And finally ends up at the thingamajig there. So now you know at least what the words, because sometimes the illustrations will have words in there to describe the exact term. So now you can start looking up, and then your colleagues might be able to tell you things too, you know. And then also you have Google, and you have, I have online dictionaries. And occasionally I have to ask Rob to look in my Swedish English or English Swedish dictionaries that I have in print. Of course, there are more dictionaries in print that you can ever have electronically.
So I guess the use of a lot of electronic material and computers has made this job a little bit easier or even possible for a visually impaired person. But what specific tools do you use to accomplish your work?
I just use the computer with JAWS and Word. Then I have my online dictionaries, and I use a suite called Word Finder. They have all kinds of dictionaries, even in specific fields, engineering and so forth. And I acquire those as I go.
What kind of challenges or obstacles have you run into in your job?
The most angst-provoking aspect of getting an assignment is to try and figure out whether it's going to have some formatting things that's going to come and bite you in your big toe, you know. So layout problem, that is something that translators used to not have to worry about. It was not expected that they would do a layout. You know, you had your typewriter and you typed out your translation and sent it in. And, you know, if it wasn't formatted the way the original document was formatted, that was fine. You were a translator. You weren't a typographic artist. You were not a typesetter. You weren't a newspaper person. You did the translation. Now, because for sighted people, it is totally possible to, without thinking about it, preserve the format of the original document, we are supposed to do the same. Sometimes when you're working in objects or columns, I have a braille display also, and I try to focus the braille display into the cell where I'm supposed to read and translate. And all of a sudden, the braille jumps away and jumps back to the source cell. So it's those things are things that you can't really talk to your agency about.
They just expect you to do the work. They don't expect that you're going to have problems with the formatting.
Yeah, they don't expect you to have accessibility issues in formatting. But sometimes I actually quite candidly tell them when I'm taking a job, I need to have some kind of idea what type of document is this. I tell them that I am visually impaired and need to use a screen reader to access the screen. And as a screen reader user, I have the following types of document that my screen reader can reliably handle: Word, Excel, and text-based PDF.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But even text-based PDF can be tricky. To say that you have a brochure from an airline and it's folded so that the PDF document will show page 1 and then page 4, then page 2 and page 3, whatever. And you might have a paragraph that ends in the middle of the first page, and then you have this disconcerting thing. You go to the next page and something totally different appears, and you have to try to find the continuation. And it's a little nerve-wracking to know whether JAWS put things out of order, or is this the way it's supposed to be? Should I just go with seems to be indicated here, or is there something wrong? You know, because JAWS sometimes tries to be helpful and rearrange the content so that you can read it.
Right.
But it doesn't necessarily preserve the layout so that you can be totally secure as a translator.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's when you need to talk to your sighted partner.
And what characteristics do you look for in a sighted partner?
The sighted partner should have an eagle eye, an angel's patience, and be somewhat forgetful, because you have the issue of confidentiality.
So how do you handle documents that have figures or text flowing across columns or pages or any of these other special circumstances?
If it's a brochure where a certain thing is supposed to appear under a picture of their, let's go back to the airliner, of the dessert cart that they are picturing here, say, then you want to make sure that has to be there underneath. And you basically have to sometimes compromise. You cannot make it fit, but you need to make sure that the text is there, kind of where it needs to be. And then there you can then trust that the layout person will do what's necessary to make it fit.
I understand there are some computerized tools that can be used for translating. Are you able to use any of those?
There are several computer-assisted translation tools. People call them CAT programs. The most well-known industry standard is Traddles. And Traddles used to be accessible and is no longer. But then I received a call from a representative from Western Standard, wanting to talk to me about a translation software program, saying that the software developer is very, very interested in having things be user-friendly. And would I at least consider maybe having a demonstration of this program? I did, and this program is called Fluency. And I had a demonstration, and they had already hotkeys for doing some things. And I said, well, I will present this to fellow translators that I have on a list called the Roundtable at ScreenReview.org. It's one of these groups. And anyway, we all have accessibility issues. So I got Tara and Anna, our access Anna, and a couple of other people interested in trying it. And Fluency has now become the go-to translation tool for us. It's the only one that works, that as far as accessibility goes. Anybody visually impaired who wants to be a translator, Fluency from Western Standard is what you want to consider.
And how do the computer-assisted translation tools work?
When you're using a CAT tool, what happens is you open your document and you have your translation tool open, and usually it works with Word. It can even work with Word, or it can work in its own window. But basically, you go from segment to segment. So you have your source segment in one window and your target segment in the other window. The fox ran to town in the source window, and you translate that in the target segment in Swedish. Then when you're done, you do a keystroke to go to the next segment. And as a JAWS user, it would be very nice, I felt, to be able to just stay and translate in the target segment, not have to move away from it, but to be able to do a keystroke and hear repeated, the fox ran to town. Even though you had an easy keystroke to go back and forth, I thought it would be so nice to not have to move. So I asked Richard, and sure enough, he put a hotkey that I could assign my own keystroke to. So that's now available. And so he is constantly upgrading and trying to make things accessible. And this is a program that's used by the mainstream profession of translation also. So there are some things that aren't so accessible. You know, they use something called dynamic windows. And that means that as you're translating, helpful things are popping up all the time to help you along. Well, they don't pop up so readily in JAWS, as we all know. So that can actually sometimes be a problem. But we now have a situation, at least, so that we can stay in our target and source windows and not be bothered with all these dynamic windows interfering if we don't want to.
Are you missing some information by not knowing what pop-up windows are popping up?
Possibly, because they will suggest terminology and so forth. And there are ways to get to those windows. What you want is to have your matches. You know, if you did the fox ran to town, next time maybe another document, the cat ran to town, the fox ran to town translation may pop up. So you just modify that. And now you have, instead of that one segment in the memory, you have two. You have the fox ran to town and the cat ran to town with its translations. So you basically want to make sure that these matches.
You want to be consistent.
Yeah, you want to have them populate and see them. And a good translation tool can help you retain a lot of your format. So it takes away some of the angst from assignments otherwise.
Well, that's great that the developer was so cooperative in making the program accessible for a large number of people.
Yeah, he's been great.
Are there any other specific challenges or workarounds that blind people would encounter trying to do translations that we haven't covered yet?
Well, I think good record keeping is something that is crucial. And that means in two areas. One is project management. And the second is, of course, invoicing and keeping track of outstanding payments and so forth. When it comes to project management, I would say that a good strategy is to have, first of all, a directory where all your translations go, then a subdirectory for the company you're working with, then a subdirectory for the assignment from that company. You might have one October 2005 assignment, March 2013. And then in each assignment, you set up a source directory. That is, here's where all the documents that you receive from this company go in that you're supposed to translate. And then you have a translation directory. That is, while you're working on them, here's where that goes. And then for safety, I like to have a submit subdirectory, that this is the final one. You don't want to, by accident, click on the half-finished translation and email it back to them. You want to make sure that this is what I'm sending. No matter how tired I am, what's in the submit directory is what goes.
So in addition to being fluent with languages, you're saying one should be pretty organized also.
Yeah, I used to be less so, and I used to, invoices, I would think, oh, I'll send in the invoice later. The thing that I've learned, no matter how woozy-brained you feel, have the invoice out, because it takes often as much as 60 days, some of them longer, to pay you. So you want that invoice out, and the more prompt you are sending it, the more they sort of get the idea, oh, I guess this person is serious. You know, if you send an invoice 3 weeks later, they feel, oh, yeah, they're not in a hurry, maybe.
I think good organizational skills can be very important in almost any profession.
Is there anything else people should make sure that they do?
One thing that if you're doing telephone interpreting, which I do.
Okay.
It's very important to have a good note taker that's silent. I use the Apex Braille Note, or I use my computer and turn off JAWS. You know, I just quickly turn on Notepad. So you need something that you can quickly get into, because when an agency calls you with a possible assignment for phone interpreting, they don't have much time to wait, because the person who calls and wants the interpreting service does often not understand that it might take an agency some time to locate an interpreter who is free to take the call. So that quick access to your note taker is very important.
What do you mean by interpreting? Can you give us an example?
Yeah, anything that you do orally is usually referred to as interpreting. And anything that's written is translation. So somebody has rented a Hertz car and it's conked out at the roadside. So they are calling Hertz. So then they are explaining to the Hertz representative, but they happen to not have the necessary English skills, so they need that. So that's the type of calls. But you can also get somebody who is calling someone in Sweden, and this person is deaf. So there is me interpreting for the rep here in America. Then there is the Swedish person at the other end. Then there is the interpreter for the deaf at the other end. So I tell the deaf services interpreter what the rep has just said, and he gestures. And so that can be an interesting... I've had a couple of those too.
As a group, blind people are notoriously underemployed, and this sounds like a really fun and rewarding profession. I'm wondering how someone gets into it and where your work comes from, how you manage to gather works to translate.
Well, actually, I started in 1982. I would say. I sent out information about myself to translation companies that didn't get so much response. But I joined the American Translators Association. At the time I lived in San Francisco, I joined the Northern California Translators Association. Joining a group like that, you then become part of their membership directory, and you are listed.
Come, my light, my feast, my strength, such a light as shows a feast.
That was also not our normal breaker tune. That was another bit of Gudrun's singing that we got off of her website. Now for this week's final item, a book that Gudrun translated, other things Gudrun does, and how to find out more about her and her activities, as well as how to contact her.
So we talked about some of the translating of pamphlets and brochures and some of the shorter things you do, but I understand you also recently did a book. How does translating a book differ from some of the other translation services you talked about?
Well, in every translation, there is a tone, a pulse, and an intent. But in a novel, you also have the essence, the spirit, the soul. And that's what you need to try and capture so that it can travel from its original language into the host language, so to speak.
And what's the name of the book and the author?
The book is The Brides of Midsummer, and the author is Wilhelm with a V, V-I-L-H-E-L-M, Moberg, M-O-B-E-R-G.
How long did it take you to translate an entire novel?
I worked on it from late November 2006 through beginning of May 2007. I might spend half a day researching a term, like the old instrument.
So now you actually provide a lot more services than what we've talked about with your translation. Can you give the link to your personal website and a quick rundown of what other kinds of things that you have there?
It's gudrunbruneau.com, GudrunBruneau.com. And there it has an about, and it has translation and voiceover, vocal instruction. And I also do a radio show for our local radio station called The Woman in Black, where I read a story and I have music that fits with the characters or help illustrate the setting, or sometimes it just provides a wry comment at the end or something, but somehow it fits in. And then I script the show, so I have this fictitious program host. She's very, very different from me. Much more acerbic, but sort of kind, but she doesn't want anybody to know that. And I do perform, and you can see information about my CD also, and you can see a little more about the book on there.
Besides being able to learn more about you on your website, how would people contact you?
Email me at gbruno@centurylink.net. gbrunot@centurylink.net.
And as usual, we'll have links to her contact information and to some of the tools that she uses in translating on our website in our show notes at www.eyesonsuccess.net.
As well as a link to where you can buy the book that she translated. That's it for show number 1427. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about the Zoom Text Screen Magnification Program from AI Squared with Derek Bove, the Technical Product Manager. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook and Audioboo at Eyes on Success, and on Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.